Continue to work with all orders of government as we deliver for Canadians through this pandemic. Let the Conservatives play games. We're focused on Canadians.
Yeah. Honourable Member for Carleton.
Speaking of games, you've got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to swindle a naive Prime Minister of $200 million of other people's money. Because that's exactly what Gateway Casinos has just done. They can't get money from anyone. In fact, for 10 years, their owner tried to sell the company, but nobody would buy. Well, we have new job losses of 2,000 people in the energy sector out west, 500 out east, 1 million Canadians without paychecks since the pandemic. Why is he throwing away our money in this jackpot for casino insiders?
And so you can see right there why the brilliance that we see on a daily basis from Pierre Poilievre is, you know, witness to all. Now, Pierre is a six-time elected MP. He has been, from the beginning, the parliamentary secretary to the president of the Treasury Board, parliamentary secretary to the Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, and the Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs, parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Transport, Infrastructure, and Communities, and then on to Minister for Democratic Reform, and then Cabinet Minister for Employment and Social Development. And I think you would all agree that Pierre has been the most fantastic finance critic that this party has ever seen. It's an honor to have him here to speak to us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Pierre Poilievre.
Well, thank you very much for that incredible introduction, Marilyn. I don't know how I'm going to live up to it. Marilyn Gladue is someone whom I greatly admire, not only for her intellect, which I will turn to in a moment, but also for her relentless campaigning in her Sarnia riding. In fact, when I was campaigning with her once, she said, "You've got to come to the seniors' home." And I said, "Marilyn, no one's going to want to see some politician from Ottawa at a seniors' home." She said, no, you're going to be a big star." So I showed up and I walked up to a lady there and I said, "Do you know who I am?" And she said, "No, but if you ask the nurse, she'll tell you who you are." So anyway, it's good to be reminded of who's in charge in this country, and it is the people. And Marilyn knows that very well. One of the things I admire about her, though, is that she is not just an excellent representative of the people. She's actually an engineer. So she has an incredible professional background, probably the most difficult academic discipline there is to get through engineering. And so she comes to Parliament Hill with this incredible logical mind that knows how to problem solve, that knows how to do complicated mathematical calculations. We're going to need a lot of that, Marilyn, to get us out of the debt that Trudeau is putting us into right now. And yet, despite this whole life of achievement that she has built up, you never meet someone who is more humble and down to earth than Marilyn Gladue. I can tell you she is absolutely loved by her colleagues, and we really appreciate the work that she's doing on behalf of the people of Sarnia. Right now, more than ever, she's fighting to save the pipeline that provides feedstock for the refineries that employ so many of her constituents. She has been a relentless champion of working class people in this country, the folks who make it possible for us to heat our homes, power our vehicles, fund our schools, hospitals, and roads. These are the people that Marilyn daily champions on the floor of the House of Commons. And never before have we needed such a champion. Never before have we needed such common sense. Because we have a government that is obsessed at this time, strangely enough, with risky new experiments and fantastical utopias. They think that now that we have COVID, when the government has been able to seize unprecedented powers to tell us where we can go and what we can do, the size of the government has now exceeded the size of the private sector. In fact, a government as a share of GDP has reached a record 57% during COVID. They think that this is an opportunity to permanently expand the role of the state. and control the lives of the population, rather than just to get us through this difficult and complicated time and back to our normal lives and the freedoms that we inherited. They think that this is their moment to seize control and to direct the destinies of everyday people. And I believe that we should be doing exactly the opposite. Instead of trying to have government politicians and bureaucrats try to remake us all, that we should focus on what has always worked, which is free enterprise. The voluntary exchange of work for wages, product for payment, investment for interest. That is the only system that has allowed people to do well by doing good, as the great Benjamin Franklin would have said back in his time. Canada now more than ever needs to focus on the basics, our current debt to GDP ratio, that is the household, business, and government debts combined are 387% the size of our GDP. So in other words, we have $3.87 of debt for every $1 of income. Now that 387% debt to GDP ratio is twice the historic average. It is higher than the United States was during the subprime debt crisis, higher than Greece was when that country went bankrupt a decade ago, higher than every other G7 country except for Japan. And the only reason we have not experienced a debt crisis yet is because supernaturally low levels of interest rates have neutralized the enormous servicing costs that would normally come along with a debt that size. So unless we reduce that debt ratio before interest rates rise to historic norms, we will have a crisis. Our economy will detonate in a way that will be extremely painful for families. Now, let me just walk through that very quickly. According to the greatest experts on debt crises, there are five things that precede a debt crisis. I'll go through them very quickly. One is a continuous and rapid buildup of debt. Well, I've just explained that we have this massive 387% debt to GDP ratio, that the government, total debt of all our governments is now bigger than our economy. Total debt of all companies is now bigger than our economy. And total debts of all our households are also bigger than our entire economy. And about a third of all that debt has been accumulated in just the last 5 years. So I think we can safely say, check, we meet that requirement for a forthcoming debt crisis. Second, household debt levels typically rise before a crisis. Well, right now, our households have near record debts, about $1.75 in debt for every dollar of take-home pay. That is also near a record. And our families, before the interest rates dropped in the crisis, were spending a record share of their income paying interest and principal on that debt. So yes, our households have experienced rising levels of debt. So we can check that second box. The third box is a rising and consistent current account deficit. A current account deficit is essentially when a country buys more from the world than it sells to the world. So if you think of yourself as living, Canada as just being an island, just for a moment. If you're on an island and you're buying more from other islands than you're selling to those islands, well, the only way to pay for it would be either to drain your savings or to rack up debt, because nobody's going to donate to you the things that you're buying in the excess of what you're selling. And so in the lead up to most debt crises, countries have these current account deficits. And the simple problem is we're not producing as much as we consume. We as a country are year after year consuming more than we produce. We are engaging in what I call debt-financed consumption rather than investment-financed production. The things we're buying, we're using in real time, and then the bill is staying with us in the form of debt. We are investing. It's just we're not investing in Canada. Canadians have currently today $800 billion more invested in foreign economies than foreign economies have invested in Canada. So our money is building factories and pipelines and other economic infrastructure in faraway places that generate income and jobs for them, while here at home, we're consuming things and racking up debt to pay for it. So yes, we have a big current account deficit, check again. The next indicator of a forthcoming debt crisis is declining output as measured by GDP. Well, our GDP was down 5.5%, or about $120 billion in the 2020 year. So that check mark can be met too. And the final leading indicator for a forthcoming debt crisis is rising asset prices. Boy, do we ever have those. You ever talk to a young person this day who's trying to buy a house? Right now, our housing prices went up last year by $65,000 from 2019 to 2020. That is the biggest dollar value increase ever and the biggest percentage point increase since 1987. And interestingly, it happened in the same year that our economy collapsed. So our economy, the underlying income with which we pay for our housing, went way down, but somehow the asset price went way up. And the same thing happened with our stock market. While our companies were reeling in COVID, many of them shut down altogether, their stock prices shot up. In fact, our S&P TSX is now reached 120%. Its value is 120% that of our entire GDP. That has never happened before. And that is because our central bank is printing money and pumping all of that cash into our financial system, which drives up stock prices, makes easy mortgages available, and drives up real estate prices, and our assets get more valuable. So right now, more expensive. Now the question is, can we afford these assets? Well, historically, all of the assets that Canadians own in Canada have been worth about 12 times the size of our economy. Right now, the assets in our country are worth 17 times the size of our economy. In other words, our economy is not big and strong enough to pay the bills on those assets, to pay down the mortgages that come with them, and to sell them into future buyers. So we have an asset bubble, which is the fifth leading indicator for a debt crisis. Now, why should we care about a debt crisis? Isn't that just something that investment bankers and business television hosts would be worried about? Well, let me put it to you this way. When debt crises happen, unemployment rates can rise as much as 7%. Housing prices can drop by a third. Foreclosure rates go through the roof. In other words, people are forced out of their homes because they can't make payments. And suicides happen because people can't stand the stress. In the University of Calgary has done a study showing that for every 1 percentage point increase in unemployment, there is a 2 percentage point increase in suicide rates. So the last time we had a massive debt crisis was under the first Trudeau back in 1983. Now, some of you will remember those days. Unemployment was 12%. Gordon Perry put up his hand. Unemployment was 12%. Inflation was 12%. You add those two together, economists call that the misery index. You know, you take unemployment, you add inflation, you get the misery index, which reached 24%, the highest on record in 1983. And again, that was the year when we had the highest rate of suicide in Canadian history. I guess when misery gets bad enough, people end their miseries. Unfortunately. And we can remember that time. And Gordon put up his hand. I'm sure others do as well. Interest rates reached 20%. Mortgage rates. Imagine that, paying 20% interest on your mortgage. Well, what happens then? People lose their homes. They have no idea how they're going to pay their bills. I remember my own parents, we had to move to a smaller house and get a loan from my grandfather for a down payment because we could not afford to pay the interest on the mortgage that we already had. But many more lost their homes altogether and became renters and never recovered from the devastation that ensued. So that is the kind of pain and suffering that can occur in the event of a debt crisis. And so what we need to do is avoid that pain and suffering by getting our finances in order before it happens. So there's still time. Here's the good news. During COVID, many families and businesses saved up cash. Why? Because they were banned from spending it. And so businesses and households have $170 billion in bank accounts sitting around. money they normally would have been spending at restaurants, on gas to drive to work, on clothing for their jobs, on other purchases that you normally make when you're not locked in your basement. But instead, they save that money up. And I believe that will give us a temporary buffer to help stave off a debt crisis. So what can we do with that buffer? One, we should encourage people to pay down debt, to invest in productive assets that will generate more income, to encourage businesses to build more factories, patents, pipelines, refineries, warehouses, business parks, and other things that generate income so that we can pay off that debt. Governments need at the same time to learn how to do more with less. So I think we should bring in a pay-as-you-go law, which requires that every time a politician brings forward an idea to spend more unbudgeted money, they have to find an equal number of dollars of savings to pay for it. So in other words, they can't simply pass it on to taxpayers or future generations. They have to look within their own budgets to pay their bills, just like families do. When little Johnny says he wants to ski this winter, well, they say then you can't play hockey. You have to pick. It's going to be one or the other. Politicians should be forced to make those sorts of basic trade-offs like every other Canadian has to do with their own money. And we need to unleash the power of our free enterprise system. We should be the fastest place on planet Earth in which to get a building permit. Right now, we're ranked 34th out of 35. It takes 170 days longer to get a building permit in Canada than the United States. Let's be the fastest to say yes when a business person wants to build a project and create jobs. Let's give quick answers to immigrants who come here with professional and trades credentials and looking to work in their field. Tell them if they can't work in their field because they're not yet qualified by Canadian standards, give them an answer on how they can become quickly qualified so that they can go on to earn very big wages and pay a maximum contribution to our Canadian economy. Let's knock down trade barriers so we can have free trade within Canada rather than just importing cheap junk from China. Let's build pipelines again so that we get world prices for our oil and gas. Let's end the shipping ban off the West Coast so we can reach the Asian market with our clean, green Canadian petroleum. Let's speed up the approval of our natural gas projects so we can sell our 1,220 trillion cubic feet of natural gas to replace dirty coal around the world, help our environment, and support working class jobs at the same time. This is how we unleash the mighty force of our Canadian economy to reduce our debts and support our prosperity, to get our people back to work and replace this credit card economy with a paycheck economy. Thank you very much.